Been and always will be a reflection of the world right outside our window. That world may change and evolve, but the one thing that will never change is the way we tell our stories of heroism. Those stories have room for everyone, regardless of their race, gender, religion, or color of their skin. The only things we don't have room for are hatred, intolerance, and bigotry. That man next to you, he's your brother. That woman over there, she's your sister. And that kid walking by, hey, who knows? He may have the proportionate strength of a spider. We're all part of one big family, the human family, and we all come together in the body of Marvel. And you, you're part of that family. You're part of the Marvel Universe.
Party nerds, what's going on, everyone?
Hey,
what's happening? What's happening?
That was amazing.
That was words from a god.
That hit me in my soul right there.
Listen, man, you know what? It's almost kind of surreal because as long as we've been alive, like we've known Stan Lee, you
know,
100%.
I mean, and we're gonna get into our personal testimonials, but I mean, he's is this as big as like Walt Disney? Like, how is this?
Oh, absolutely.
I wasn't alive when Walt Disney died.
Right.
But I mean,
absolutely.
But think of the epic. Like, who was the last person that passed away? I would say for me, like Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Would you guys say?
I would put it on that level.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Michael like if Jackson, you're talking about
Prince.
Yeah. Like if you're talking like the Mount Rushmore of like. Imagine like creating imaginary worlds or creating universes just with your skills. Definitely Stan Lee is like number one.
He
number
is
two.
One. He's number one.
And we're going to get into everything. But I just before we get started, I wanted to introduce because we definitely have we got a mixed cast today. We got Devin, the man, is back. What's up, Dev?
Ain't shit up, man.
Royal Farms was up.
Yo. Listen. By the way, Devin, before we came here, normally we go to Wawa. If you guys are from the East Coast, you know Wawa is pretty much our Mecca. That's where you can get everything you need in life. You can get gas. You can get clothes. You can get hoagies. It don't
matter. Hey, don't tell me about clothes.
What are you going
are you
to?
What the fuck? For,
oh, wait,
man.
No, that was that one in California. But no, but there's a place called Royal Farms, and we were like, all right. You know,
fried chicken?
And no. I promise y'all,
listen,
this ain't an advertisement for them niggas. We don't know them niggas like that. Literally. This really just happened.
Yo, so did you enjoy your chicken? They gave him a bag of chicken.
Yeah, I just I didn't know what I was ordering, bro.
Right
I didn't know what I was ordering. They handed me this big ass bag of chicken.
Yo, wait. He's walking to the car, and I see a white guy looking at him like typical. There they go again, and they're
goddamn guess bag.
Guess what? Because he didn't listen to Stan Lee, man. You know what I'm saying?
So, and Haas, what's up, man?
What's up, man?
Me and this gentleman, we go way back. Haas, just like us, is a fellow nerd. He's pretty much Super Saiyan James, you know. If you
hey, look, just because y'all added an extra amount of beige up in here, don't get it flustered, man. You know what I'm saying? What is he, Mother of Pearl? And I'm told.
Yeah, we got all shades in this motherfucking
it's
man.
It's pretty much James like you
all
haven't.
Shades.
James like you haven't seen my full power.
Wilder.
What's going on? Glad to have you on.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here, man. It's cool.
So you're a comic book fan too. Like, did you love Stan Lee?
Stan Lee is my childhood and my adulthood, man. Like, he's everything, man. You watch the cartoons, he'd be like, hey, true believers.
True believers, yeah.
Whether it's the Fantastic Four cartoon or the Spider-Man cartoons, like, you know, the crazy thing is, like, if you think of DC, man, you automatically think of, like Batman and Superman. They pop right at you, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you think of Marvel, like, it's Spider-Man, Stan Lee. Like, you see that?
Yeah.
It's just, like, that's the, like, he's
he
on
made
Batman,
himself
Superman
a
league.
Superhero.
100%.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's how I see Marvel. The first thing I think of Marvel, I think of Spider-Man, I think of Stan Lee. And that's, like, that's been my whole life for about 37 years, man. That's how it's been.
And that's how much he meant to all of us.
100%.
Nikki, what's going on, Nikki?
Hello.
How are you? So me, Nikki, and James, we went to trivia night a couple weeks ago. We got our ass kicked.
Hey, man.
We misunderstood one of those rounds.
Yo, hold on. Wait, even facts?
Yo, listen, no.
I was running
your
the table.
Your name is literally facts.
Hey, I was running the table, man. I'm sorry, man. But some of them things, Killmonger's dad, I don't know if it's Unjoku or Mbaku or Njobu. I couldn't get the shit right. Okay, Star-Lord. It's N'apostrophe something.
But no, but we held our own. The problem was, first of all, I think people was cheating. They had their phones.
Hell yeah, the motherfuckers was cheating. Like,
oh, you can't.
Yeah. The other table, yeah. Man.
No, they were
you can't do trivia
you can
now.
You can hear a pin drop.
Yeah.
That's
it. You need to turn in your phone at the door before you go into any trivia night.
Just like strip club. You ain't going to be taking no pictures of no titties tonight. You're going to hand your phone in.
They was cheating like a mug.
They was cheating.
That's our excuse and we sticking to it.
Yeah, damn right.
Hell yeah.
AJ, what's going on, bro?
Yo, everything sucks.
Oh, I know.
God damn.
Yeah. So wait, first of all, you posted a funny meme.
God damn, somebody smashed your Super Smash Brothers. What happened?
Yo, Stanley is dead. What you mean?
Oh,
that's the only thing it takes to make a week shitty.
Like, damn.
So wait, you put a post up like you were excited to see the Detective Pikachu trailer, and then all of a sudden, right afterwards, it's like,
yo, I woke up, the first thing I see is like a new Toy Story 4 trailer. I was like, oh, yo, fuck yeah. Then the next thing, like a couple hours later, I see like, yo, Detective Pikachu. Oh, it actually looks good. Oh, man, let's go. And then like 30 minutes later, I'm just like, what? No. Oh. Like, not cool. Not cool.
No, yeah. It's big. And James, what's going on, gentlemen?
What's going on, man? How's everything going?
So let's get into it. I mean, Stan Lee... One thing about Stan Lee, and I know we're going to get a little bit more into
this. I got so much to fucking say, god damn it.
Let me just set the stage. Let me just say, just like you heard in the intro, one thing about Stan Lee is the fact that you're talking about a guy with not a racist bone in him. This guy, he was all about, did you guys ever see the movie, the documentary on him? They have a documentary on Stan Lee. We're pretty much talking about how...
Thank you, Deb, for the clip.
Hilarious.
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 Just pretty much how he... There was a story where his wife, after they lost a child together, they went to adopt. So the problem is they wanted to adopt like a kid of a different race and stuff. But during the 50s, 60s, they just wouldn't allow that. Matter of fact, they couldn't adopt because they weren't Catholic. They couldn't adopt because they weren't Jewish. They couldn't adopt any child outside of their race. But Stan Lee was so bothered by that, you know. He was just a man that brought everyone together, man. What are you guys' thoughts, man? This is just going to be a show where at 7 o'clock, we're gonna be taking calls. You know, you guys feel free. But James, what are your memories?
I was about to say, let everybody else go. I got a bunch of shit to say.
I mean, think about this. Like, just the inclusion quote that you gave at the beginning of the show. Look at all the characters he created as part of like a co-creator. You have Spider-Man. You have the Hulk, Doctor Strange, the Fantastic Four, Daredevil, Black Panther, the X-Men, Ant-Man, Iron Man, Thor, the tent poles of Marvel, and for the most part, the MCU in general, 100%. Were all came from him and all the work he did with Jack Kirby, with his brother Larry, just so much diversity just in there. And then also him coming from a Manhattan background as well. Also, he was able to kind of see New York City just through all the decades and just kind of understand how we as people are and then put that influence in his characters, which is amazing.
And one thing about Stan is his comics and creations were always relevant. Like, people don't realize, like, if you think about, like, the Incredible Hulk, you know, this is when he created him during the talk of, like, nuclear, when we finally were talking about nuclear bombs and stuff like that. So he was like, wait a minute, like, what if I did create a character that was kind of mutated, you know, and gave him, like, an almost Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde thing. And then he created, you know, you had like Iron Man during the industrial stuff going on with the industry. Everything he did was so relevant. Now, let me ask you, like, Haas, let me throw this to you. Like, how would he differ? How did he differ from DC during the time? Like, I mean,
if you look at DC, like, I love them both, like, equally. Like, I'm not one of those people.
Don't lie.
I love them. I'm sorry.
Don't lie.
I love them.
The comics, not the movies.
Stop it, light skin. I don't want to hear it. Nah, I'm with you. You know we team light skin all day. No, but seriously, like, DC, see, the thing with DC, they're heroes, right? They're top heavy, right? They're like gods, right?
Besides, that sounds like someone else would say.
They're top heavy, man. Like Superman is unbelievable, right? Like, the Green Lantern, unbelievable. Like, these guys have a special set of powers that are just like, they're just out of this world, right? So when you look at the Marvel characters, they're more like, yeah, they have incredible powers, but at the same time, you as the reader can relate to them, because if you look at, let's look at back on Spider-Man, matter of fact. Like, he has an incredible power set. But at the same time, his life outside of being Spider-Man is so complicated, and he runs into all these problems. He got money problems. He has girlfriend problems. He has friend problems. Like, and he's trying to balance doing the right thing at the same time, just trying to live his life and try to, you know, go to a dance or something, right? So what Stan did was make the real world part of Marvel, right? He brought the real world in. He painted the picture of all of New York. Like, a lot of the heroes are from New York. Like, where DC, you have, like, Metropolis and Gotham. They're made-up cities, right? Mm. But he brought New York to the forefront, right? Now, if you're somebody living in Idaho, you're reading a Fantastic Four comic, right? He got to paint that picture of New York for you. And he put down landmarks, streets, everything.
You know what's so wild? Like, you're right. Like, DC, they have Metropolis, Gotham, and people are like, oh, Gotham's supposed to be Newark and Metropolis, New York City. But the bottom line, it was still fictitious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're right. And Devin, you always say
that's up to interpretation. Like, if you're the reader, you have to, like, interpret,
New York must be the city, exactly, right? Star City, Philadelphia, you know what I mean? But you always say that,
Devin. Man, we know Gotham's Newark.
You say that, like, DC, sometimes DC characters were too godlike. You couldn't relate.
They were overpowered characters. And I feel like even if they did intend for them to be toys that you play with each other, you know what I'm saying? Like, toys that can play with, but they don't play, for me, as well together as Marvel. It feels like Marvel, each character was made to be next to the other characters. It feels like it was like, what am I adding to this world where the other ones seem like they were just made? It doesn't feel like Batman was made to be in the same universe as Superman. It feels like they made it work.
Gotcha.
You feel what I'm saying?
Right, right.
The other ones feel like they just were born of the same thing.
And you know what? It's both of you guys, what you're saying, one thing Stan Lee did, he always made the characters, just like I said, Earl, kind of reflect what was going on in the real world. Not just the real world, in the comic world.
Mm-hmm. But just to stay on that, isn't it obviously going to happen like that if one person is creating all of it?
Yes.
If you're creating Batman and I'm creating the creator of Batman, is it the creator of Superman?
Right.
Is it the creator of Wonder Woman? But if one guy is creating everything, of course he's making something that's a complete picture.
Consistency.
Right.
Yeah,
and that's why they work so well together, and you feel different about those characters as far as I'm concerned. You know what I'm saying? He enjoys both of them equally. I don't.
He said, I don't. You know what I'm saying? I love him, man.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, finish what you're saying.
Another thing, you go on social media, right? They got, like, hashtag stay woke, right? Mm-hmm. That was Stan Lee. He was woke the whole time, because what he did, like what he did with Magneto and Professor X, man, he used Malcolm X and Martin Luther King as the foundation of those characters, right? Because they both believe what they were
all
doing
protecting
was right.
a debilitated race,
right? Mm-hmm. Like he
from
was
different different viewpoints.
Yes, right. Yes. So that was the conflict of the X-Men for about 50 years, man. Like, that's crazy. Like he knew what was going on at the time and applied it to a story for kids to read, right? But also to allow the reader to be compassionate to, like, the mutant problem, right? Or so-called problem. Like, these mutants, they weren't being accepted in society, right? Mm-hmm. And what he did with the X-Men was give them a place where they could be themselves
What that remind you of, son?
So, all right, now James,
tell me how that parallels into a certain type of race of people.
James.
Please, if anybody would like to elaborate,
give us that light skin wisdom.
You know what I'm saying? If anybody would like to elaborate on that, please.
So wait, I mean, one thing about Stan is just like, and I want to get more like into this, like, now that you've opened that door, as far as, like, you know, obviously they said, like, Professor X was like kind of like the Dr. Martin Luther King.
No, the other way.
Oh,
yeah.
All right. No.
Magneto was the Malcolm X.
Magneto, right.
Which was the by any means necessary brother.
Right.
And Professor X was the person that was taught nonviolence and was trying to perceive a way for us to integrate with the world on a better scale.
Right.
And where Magneto and his tribe, whether it was the people that he stole from the Hellfire Club or whether it was the assemblance of mutants that he took under his wing, was like, okay, we are never going to be accepted into society. So the best thing for us to do is just to eradicate humans.
Right.
Because we're just not going to be accepted.
Do you think that
I wonder this. Did he use that extreme with powers and everything like that to extra prove a point? Because think about this. There's parallels for a person being black or Chinese or something like that, but it is not the same thing as a person being a mutant. We argue over gun laws because you could point a gun at somebody and kill them. Having people that could literally strike a person down with lightning instantly and stuff like that, I believe that we all in real life would have a serious problem with that. We read right. the comic and we feel like we're on the team of the X-Men. Like, why are they like that with them? But it's like, oh, that guy right there is a nuclear bomb. That guy can do this. Like, you literally, you might as well have no gun laws or nothing, because they can literally snap of a finger. He could crush your body.
Right.
Yeah. Magneto like this. So if people are at home reading this and they feel for those people, how you can't feel for black people? We can't even do none of that shit. We can't even fight y'all off half the time. You got all kinds of guns, hoses, dogs and shit. You know what I'm saying? If we was X-Men, we'd break them fucking dogs' necks. You know what I'm saying?
And, no way. And think about the marketing genius behind Stan Lee. Like, everything we're talking, like, so, he did it actually to make a statement based on what was going on in the world, but think about how that helped the sales of all of his comics. Because now you're not just hitting one demographic, like the Superman, I'm lifting the truck saving. Now you're like, you got people in the city, you got people on college campuses, you know, you got people in every demographic. Stan made it a point. He was so,
I say this with him. He was the epitome of a boss. He was the boss. And not to say that in a derogatory term, the man made moves and was the stamp on Marvel as we see it today. So you look at first off, the man joined Timely Comics as an assistant editor at age 16. You know, 16 years old, he's already starting to write editorials and comics. He started out writing obituaries. Now, I don't know if anybody's ever read an obituary, but it takes a lot of glamour to basically put a person that's super regular and build him up to about this.
Yeah.
Like, his life is just that extraordinary.
And I can see him doing that. He was a good man. He lived his life the best he could.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't do that voice no more.
No, I have worse.
But, you know, the ultimate, like, I guess if you want to call it the golden age of Marvel Comics, between him and Jack Kirby. Jack Kirby was the artist.
You know, Hold on, don't do him like that.
I'm not going to say it. He was the artist.
He was an artist and creator.
And creator.
All right, I gotta make sure I stand up.
He is the co-creator.
Yes.
Okay. So they both put their hands in this. But as far as the personalities that you see in a lot of these superheroes are all basically administered by Stan Lee.
Right.
The fact that you see Spider-Man on that much of an emotional scale in all of his movies. The fact that we make memes about Tobey Maguire crying like a little bitch half the time, being Spider-Man, is because that's the way Stan wanted him to be.
Over-exaggerated.
The way that he died in Infinity War, the way that you saw basically a 15-year-old kid dying, like, I don't want to go. Mm-hmm. And that was like the most thought-provoking death that you saw in Infinity War.
But that was all.
But that's how Stan wanted his emotion to be.
And that's what Stan added. He exaggerated everything. And just to let you guys know, we are going to have calls tonight, people calling in with testimonials of Stan Lee, because he meant so much to so many people. So throughout, actually, I want to take the first caller now. Caller, are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, what's going on, caller? What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name's Joe. I'm a cosplayer. I go by Joe the Beast McCoy. I'm calling in from Delaware.
Nice. What's going on, Joe?
What you want to talk about in regards to Stan Lee? Like,
By the way, I know Joe, because when I do my Luke Cage, we always see Joe. Joe, first of all, I'm not a small guy. Joe is bigger than me, so, know, and he even makes some cos here. Joe is a beast. Thanks for calling, Joe. So, Joe, what did Stan Lee mean to you, man? I know you're in the nerd community. You're out there at these conventions. Like, what did he mean to your life?
I definitely, for me personally, Stan Lee definitely shaped my life. Like, a lot of momentous times in my life were shaped by Marvel. Like, I never forget, like, from the time I was a child, like, one time my dad, he had to pick me up from the hospital, and, like, I had to get out of school early and stuff. And when we went home, like, I was watching old school Incredible Hulk cartoons that my dad grew up with. My first comic book I ever got, I was like around 9. It was a Spectacular Spider-Man. And I mean, just a lot of the challenging times in my life, like, you know, particularly Marvel Comics was always there for me.
So, and like Stan said at the beginning, it was an escape. Like, you saw Marvel Comics, you saw Stan Lee as an escape from anything going on around you.
Absolutely. In particular, definitely the X-Men. Because I want to say, I remember when the 90s series came out, I found it fascinating, but I started collecting it because one of my other cousins, interesting thing about me, I grew up in a very rural area, and being of a interracial background from a young age, like, I was not always treated well. So I saw the X-Men as something relatable because I'm like, here's this group of people with great potential.
You were one of those mutant mixed kids, right?
Hey, man.
So I thought that was amazing.
Yeah, man. Listen, and did you ever meet him at a convention before? Did you ever get the opportunity?
Unfortunately, no. And that's the thing that hurts me. My goal was to meet him the other year at Rhode Island Comic Con. But unfortunately, me and my boy there are traveling up. Like, we hit, like, traffic and stuff, and a lot of crazy things happen, and I missed him by, like, a short span of time, and you know, it sucks because that was like it. You know, any other time, it just didn't work out. So, and that's just the part that sucks, you know?
Just know that was Darnell's way to stun on you. Whenever he asked somebody something he's running around asking people, yo, you ever get to meet Stan? Well, I did.
Joe, he is a liar.
You too, buddy.
Get behind me, Satan.
He got the picture on Dan.
First of all, he said,
here's the picture right here.
Because I know Joe goes to a lot of these conventions. I'm like, there's a good chance he met him. I wasn't like, yo, Joe, did you meet Stan Lee? I don't think so. No, I wasn't like that. Guys, give it up for Joe, man. Great call, man. I'll be seeing you at these conventions, man. I'll be seeing you real soon.
Definitely, bro.
All right, man.
All right, thank you, man. Thanks for having
me.
Thank you. Of course, stay up.
But on some real stuff, like, you know, since we're on the topic, Donnie and I did see him like a few years ago.
We didn't see that picture.
Really? Tell us the story.
But like the main thing is, like, it was a very brief interaction. We got in there, we took a photo, we talked to him for like literally like 10 seconds. But in that 10 seconds, you can get like a sense of warmth.
He said to me, he was like, great smile. And I was like dumbfounded. I'm like, oh, thanks, man.
So that's why you end up in that with that goofy ass smile on your face.
It's Stan Lee.
For like years, he would sign every comic book. He would take all these photos. He would always go to his conventions. He didn't just like create things and then like, you know, fuck off in a corner. He genuinely cared about his fan base. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to make other people happy as well. And that's not something you get with a lot of people in general. You know what I mean?
Speaking of those cons, like, there was a convention that was supposed to happen in Atlantic City.
Ooh, I remember that.
And he was supposed to show up, and the shit was sold the fuck out.
Yeah.
As soon as he canceled, the whole fucking convention canceled.
Well, you know, I don't want to talk bad about convention. He didn't want to cancel, but the convention didn't pay him what he was supposed to be paid. But that pissed a lot of people off.
Sorry for you. And then all of a sudden...
Yo, was that racism?
Sorry for you. Yes, it was.
So, wait.
I'm not even going to ask who or what. What the hell?
Wait. Before we take the next caller, I do want to, AJ, like, kind of stretching on what you said. Stan Lee, he wasn't just a writer. He wasn't just a creator. He made himself like a personality. He's proof that, you know, people, when they buy a brand, sometimes they're buying you.
Mm-hmm. So he's the Hugh Hefner of this shit. Like how you, Hugh Hefner's Hugh Hefner, and then there's the titties. You feel what I'm saying? Got Hugh Hefner and you got the titties. The titties is the characters, but he was still, you know what I'm saying? He was still him.
He had that image, right?
Right. That's what it was. No, Hugh Hefner with the titties.
I don't even think of the Playboy Mansion anymore. Without Hugh, man.
It's
like,
true.
I really don't. Yeah. I kid you not. I just don't.
Let me just tell you how.
So hold on. That must prove that Marvel characters is better than titties. Feel what I'm saying?
You know what? Hey, you got a point there, brother.
I mean, it gotta be because you're not even thinking about the titties no more since the bull did, but you still.
Ask Nicole, what is your thought on this?
So I found a picture of Stanley and Hugh Hefner together.
Oh, God, it's
pretty on point.
Was it in the mansion?
Maybe. I don't know. He's wearing a robe, so it has to be in the background.
All right, guys. So we got one more caller. Caller, are you on the line?
Hello?
Yeah, the first one.
Hey, caller, what's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Austin. I'm from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Nice, man. What do you want to talk about in terms of Stan Lee?
The one thing I want to talk about Stan Lee, it was the first time I ever saw a comic book movie. My dad took me to see it. It was Captain America, the First Avenger.
Okay.
I didn't really care for comic books, but it was just something about that Stan Lee did with that character. It made me feel like I could do anything I wanted to do. Mm. And I think that's one thing that Stan Lee did differently than from DC. Because DC, I'm like, sure, whatever, your parents got killed, but you really think I'm going to become a ninja and take on some weird clown dude? Like,
yo! Damn! That was lit!
Yo, why are you going to do better?
No!
And the mythos has been destroyed.
Wow.
In 2 seconds.
Yeah. And, like, how the hell do you expect me to be an alien? But there's just something about Stan Lee. He turned these no-good losers and made them into something else.
Wait, you mean he turned us? Because like, that's us.
Yeah.
No. I'm talking about the superheroes. So, like, Captain America, you know, Steve Rogers, he was like a loser.
Mm.
And Bruce Banner, he made them into something else. Like, you may be somewhere small. You may get bullied because you're tiny and you don't eat a lot.
Right.
But you can be better than everyone else. You can stop bullying. You can stop all these terrible things. And that's what Stan Lee did. He basically just told a bunch of us, like, embrace your inner hero. I hope that makes sense. But that's what I felt with Stan Lee. No one else could do that.
No, that's
First of all, Oscar, that's a great call.
That's a perfect way to put it.
You're one of the best calls we ever had on this goddamn show. And we owe that call. We owe that call to Stan Lee. Yeah.
Cheers.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Cheers to that.
Exactly. No one can replace him.
Oscar, thank you for calling. Guys,
yeah, thank you, brother.
That was a great call.
That's what the fuck I'm talking about. But, so, Lee brings right, that so look, good call.
Look, just to bring back some of the boss moves and how just God gave him layups to the basket. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So the creation of Incredible Hulk was a fuck up at the printer shop. Incredible Hulk was supposed to be gray.
Really?
All right. So Jack Kirby drew it up and they sent it through the printer and they had a deadline and saw the Incredible Hulk came out green. And they were like, well, we got like fucking half hour left. All right, take the shit. Hurry up. Go ahead.
No, it came out gray.
And the rest is fucking.
No, it came out gray.
It came out gray, but when it got to the printer there, it came out green. Nah. And the first time they seen the comic, it came out green.
Gray,
right?
Nah, it was gray. But the gray, I promise, it was gray.
It wasn't gray.
It was gray. Listen, it was gray, and the gray tones kept coming out different. Sometimes it would be like black, and he needed a different color, and he had to pick something
random. It is gray.
Yes.
It's gray.
No. It was
number gray. One was gray.
Right. It's gray. And what happened was it transformed into green. No, the inside covers kept switching. We could fact check. The inside pages kept being different from like panel to panel. So what happened was he asked them, what color can we color him? That is a consistent color. They was like, you could pick anything else but gray. So he just freestyled off the top of his head, just make him green then. That's what happened.
Mm.
They used the green. The green ended up working, and it was a good accident. And that's where he was able to call him, you know, Charlie Green Giant or the Green Machine or this, that, and the third. That's where it came from.
And no, think about
all. I promise.
Whenever you think of something toxic today, you think the color green, even though toxic stuff isn't green. It was perfect.
Think Ghostbusters.
You had
the other boss move that happened is that, you know, Jack Kirby was the first person to draw up Spider-Man.
And Stan Lee saw it, and he said, I didn't disagree with the fact of how he drew it. I just didn't like the way he drew it. So then he just was like, all right, Steve Ditko, you draw it. You draw it. All of a sudden, he loves this character, and he creates the Spider-Man that we know and love.
So this is what I want to know with that, because I don't understand the details of that. When Steve, when he drew it up, right? Is the costume the same and he don't like the style of how he made him, like as far as muscles or something like that, bro? Or was it a different costume?
No,
it was a different costume.
Okay.
To be honest, the way that Jack Kirby drew it up kind of resembles the way that Iron Spider looks now.
Cleaner.
Cleaner with that gold and red that they drew up.
The gold and red.
But when he was like, all right, Steve, you give it a go.
Yeah, the Hulk was gray.
And he did the blue with the red, the blue cut off with the red, and then all the spider webs in between.
Right.
He was like, Steve, you got this shit. And gave it to him.
So going off at his point, to go back to the Hulk, so I did verify it. Stan Lee wanted the Hulk to be gray originally, but because of inking issues at the press, it ended up changing to green. So they're like, okay, well, I guess we got to go with green now. Yeah. Then they actually.
So wait, are you saying Devin's wrong?
No, I'm right.
No.
I'm right.
He was right.
I'm telling you.
No, he was right.
No, I'm telling you, I'm right.
Because I remember the first.
Yeah, because he was gray in issue one, and then afterwards,
he phased into green because of the printer issue, and they said.
But they ended up adding the Grey Hulk as a separate personality.
Right.
They brought in Grey Hulk, Savage Hulk.
But that
Hulk.
Was mad later, though, wasn't it? The Grey Hulk?
No. Well, if you're talking about modern times, yes, they did that later on again, like almost now.
That's what I'm saying. No, well, yeah, like when I was, I remember there being a Grey Hulk, but they made an extra Grey Hulk not too long after the green one.
Yeah,
I didn't even know that.
He's less savage in gray.
Yeah, I didn't even know that.
And so another thing, I'm going to just take a right turn real quick, because I want to get Nicole involved. He was, before Storm, was there any really powerful black female superhero? Now, one thing, think about the X-Men. Storm, even to this day, is one of the most powerful X-Men, if not Marvel universe characters. Period. Like
the bitch controls weather.
She is super strong. So what do you feel about how Stan Lee helped women? Because we're talking about a lot about like races. Do you feel like how he represented women? Like because he didn't necessarily have them all. I feel like DC dressed the girls.
Did he make Storm though?
He made the X-Men, but not specifically Storm.
No, he made the first five X-Men.
It was Cyclops, Beast,
and everything. That giant size X-Men was created with who did the giant size?
Was that Chris Claremont?
I want to say Claremont, but I could be wrong.
It had to be Claremont.
It's Claremont. He did the giant size X-Men, which brought Storm and Nightcrawler.
Okay. It brought Wolverine over from Alpha Flight.
They stole Wolverine, and that's Storm wasn't. I don't think Storm was the Stan Lee creation.
But he did make Black Panther. He did.
He did. Black Panther.
100%. Yo, that's I don't want to talk about it.
So wait. Let's go. I'm going to call to start on.
But with Black Panther also comes the Dora. This is why we lost.
Dora Mouge or whatever.
Dora called. The Explorer?
Dora something. No. You know what I'm talking about.
You know what I'm talking about.
Nope. But the fact that his army is full of powerful black women is... just this year,
Women too.
The impact that even it's leaving now is phenomenal. It's insane that it took that long for us to have something like that. But no, the impact is representation matters. We always say that, right? And to be able to see people that look like you that are also powerful and strong and superheroes.
So
on
I
some
ask
level.
You this: would you say that Stan Lee created Afrofuturism with the creation of Wakanda?
Created it?
You think he created it?
Maybe he did, huh? Yeah, I haven't thought about it. Maybe he did.
But you think about it, like he created Black Panther during the time where there were Black Panthers during that period. But Black Panther, so he actually took something that had a negative connotation to some people.
Yeah,
some people during the time, Black Panthers were considered a threat, just like some people looked at, it was a very militant group, but St- Stan Lee was all about bringing everyone together. So by creating this character and making him a hero, nowadays when you see Black Panther, you're like, oh yeah, that movie was great, phenomenal. I mean, that there's no, you can't even begin to express how much Stan Lee has done, know, for the community, you know. And even going back, like, let's go back in time a little bit, you know, like, think about when he was working in a small office. Like, Stan Lee, how many hits did he take when he was trying to make Marvel work? Like,
you want to know, to be honest, it didn't take that long, because his first hit was Captain America, and it only took 5 years of him being at Timely Comics, which then transferred to Atlas Comics, which then,
some point, Timely was going through hard times,
because there was a period during the
60s where people were anti-comics. They thought that child delinquency,
that's when they
was
created
all that.
Atlas Comics. Atlas Comics is what became Marvel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, he of course got passed with the torch. It was like, our comic division is going to get transferred over, because, like, there's not that many people doing comics that can do it this well. So when Timely got bought out, they went under their little bankruptcy, and then Atlas came about. You know, they had no choice but to keep Stan Lee and Jack Kirby from doing these comics.
Right.
But the breaking issue was when Captain America came out, and that wasn't even that long. Like, he did that for Timely.
So wait,
it was two.
Just so we're on the same, sure. Unless Wikipedia is wrong, and it has been wrong before, it says Captain America was created by Jack Kirby and Joe Simon.
No. Stan Lee didn't create Captain America.
It was his first hit.
He took over the writing for Captain America.
He took over the writing for
Captain America. All right.
That's what I
gotcha. And by the way, we got another caller. Taylor, we got a caller. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
What is your name, and where are you calling from?
Andre, I'm calling from the Bronx.
Oh, Andre, what's going on? What's up?
So you are from New York City. What do you have to say about the man who was Stan Lee?
He pretty much was an innovator and an inspiration of unity across, you know, a lot of generations, because of the world that he created. And of course, it was more like an outlet for a lot of us outcasts that, you know, that felt like, you know, we were kind of out of place, because we were the ones that read comics, we were the ones that imagined ourselves, we were the ones that tried to create our own. He was an innovator of inspiration for us to want to create our own or even be a part of Marvel. So the thing about Stan Lee passing is that look at the impact that he made, and look what he left us. It didn't just end with his passing. He pretty much passed the torch to generations after him to carry on. So we can only imagine, you know, what the next generation will bring for Marvel Comics, you know, after now he's gone.
So now let me ask you a question, because this is something we touched on earlier. Do you feel Stan Lee being the one of the main writers for Marvel, connecting his world and universe, is that the reason why the MCU right now is doing so well, in something like the DC, where you're kind of patchworking characters that weren't necessarily written together? Is that why they're struggling, because it's a further stretch to connect these worlds? You know, you have a Wonder Woman from some other island, and then you have Batman, whereas in Marvel, literally somebody's from New York, someone's from Florida, someone's from the West Coast of Avengers. You know, do you think that's why the Stan Lee, you know, his universe is actually thriving right now?
Yes, the one thing that we can give Stan Lee is that he had complete consistency with his writing and with the stories, where DC is just a cavalcade of Pandora's boxes spread all across the galaxy.
Oh my!
That's awesome.
He's not wrong.
I like that.
Not wrong.
Yeah. Talk, brother.
Yeah, yeah. You put not that wrong. Nail on the head with that. Well, look, man. Thank you for calling, guys. Give it up for the caller. Great call.
Real quick. So the reason why I said what I said earlier is I thought Jack Kirby made Black Panther.
Oh yeah,
That's what I thought. And it kind of says that. Jack Kirby's original concept for the art for Black Panther, actually the character's name was Cole Tiger, And
man, that's a cold tiger.
And it cold tiger, like a dark tiger. So,
yeah.
So
he must be from Chicago. Like J. Cole?
Man, that's a cold tiger.
Is he a modern day rapper?
No, which makes sense. Since I didn't know, I never thought about the fact that the panther wasn't a animal, like a certain animal wasn't a panther. I didn't even thought about that before.
Oh, say what?
Yeah, Black Panther could be either a black panther jaguar is a or bunch black of cats. Leopard.
It could no be either such or. Thing as a panther as a yeah, animal.
It's just a sub name for a leopard or a jaguar, depending if which one's black, because like, that happens in their color system.
Well, damn, y'all, I ain't know that.
I want to see a panther. All of that shit is.
Wait, hold on. Let me find out y'all profiling black cats. What's up with that, man?
Hey, yeah, man.
So,
hey,
and it says hey. That. that Stan Lee said that the name was inspired by a pulp adventure character, and that the whole thing with the Black Panthers is completely a coincidence.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on something. I think when they came out with Black Panther the comic, I think he beat the actual Black Panther Party by a couple months.
Yeah,
because like
the original
like
party
that.
Was called the Lowndes County Freedom Organization, yeah. Which was right around World War II or so. So when he came up with the name back in October. It was right before October 1966 before they changed it
right.
to the Black Panther.
They probably right. changed that him. Shit. They probably changed that shit after the Marvel yeah. shit. Yo, Stan. Yo,
Stan. After Stan.
Yo, Stan,
yeah,
Stan was Stan the leader of the Black Panthers. That's what it is.
All right.
But I wanted to touch on something about the last car said, and he was talking about how and we were talking about how Stan Lee had. He was like that one voice that
his story was coherent
with the characters, right?
Okay,
coherent. Go ahead, man. Go ahead.
with Stan, right? Because of what Stan did with the characters and everything, right? He allowed the presence of Kevin Feige to come, because he is that singular voice that steers the MCU.
That motherfucker's who we needed.
Yeah. So as Stan Lee is the GOAT, right? He is the GOAT. And there's nobody that's going to fill his shoes, right? But at the same time, we do have another legend in place that is overseeing the greatest series probably of all time. So Kevin Feige is the one that's gives the okays, the no's. Yeah, we're going to do this. No, we're going to do that. We're going to scrap that. We're going to do that. All right, bring that character in. Like, he's that one voice that makes this train go.
And they interviewed him, and he was talking about how much he loved Marvel before any of this and loved Stan Lee. So he was a fan. I mean, and you just take it, again, to the DC. You know, they had Zack Snyder and...
what they have Jeff Johns, though. You got to give him credit, too.
Jeff Johns. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
They had him on a little bit later into the...
But he was DC. Always...
He's been, at least for the TV
TV portion, he's always been a part of it. But for the...
For the movies, he's just been.
Here's my point. When they brought on Zack Snyder, that was DC throwing their dice like, this is our guy. We want to see his vision. But his vision didn't get over with everyone. Whereas, you know, Kevin Feige, his vision was absolutely what everyone wanted. Now, don't get it wrong. There's some people that love Justice League and Batman vs. Superman, but it wasn't a universal, yes, this is it. Whereas Kevin Feige, I mean, you can say, oh, the movie, some people say Marvel movies are too campy. They're too much humor, but look, have you ever read comics?
Comics are
you know, for the most part.
And Kevin Feige, he is that nerd that knows everything about these characters. And so if it's not done right, it's not going to be put up on screen. Like, we're not going to see that type of product.
That's true.
It's not going to happen. The problem with DC and Warner Brothers, because they're tied together, right, as far as their movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
The thing with that is that they, number one, they saw that Marvel had success building a universe, right? So that's number one. Number two, they wanted to catch up. So instead of having the patience like Marvel did of putting one movie in, bringing Iron Man in, bringing in the Hulk, bringing in Thor, and building up the Avengers, right? They said, all right, we need to jump on this Avengers bandwagon. Now, they came out with Man of Steel, right? Mm. I'm a fan of Man of Steel. I like Man of Steel. I like it a lot. And that's
but
just
how long
me.
Did it
that's
take on me. The Murky Man?
All right, so you're touching on... He's hitting the point, right? So they go ahead, they do Batman versus Superman, right? Now, as a fan, right? Like, that announcement shocked the world. Like, oh, we're about to finally get Batman and Superman. Like, I wanted Michael Keaton and Christopher Reeve to go at it. Now...
Right.
All right, so now it's going down, right? But they dropped the ball just on that movie alone with there's too many cooks in the kitchen, right?
Right.
So I was just about to say that.
Right.
So they didn't allow Zack Snyder to do his thing. Like, just like Kevin Feige is that one voice, they didn't allow him. They wanted, oh, no, we can't do that. Oh, if we do that, then it's not going to be as good as a Marvel movie.
That's what
scared. They were so scared with Batman vs. Superman and Justice League. They were so scared to make bad movies that they made bad movies.
In our chat, the Yummy Geek says Man of Steel was too long. It was okay. Like, we hyping it up.
I like Man of Steel.
I'm going to go off of your point, because as you mentioned, there are too many cooks in terms of like the DC extended universe. You have DC's influence. You have Warner Brothers' influence. You have other studios who are also influencing everything that's going on with all these DC movies, which is why you have such a convoluted mess of different ideas that are trying to get thrown together, and none of them mix up together. Whereas with Marvel, it's just one thing. Marvel Studios, Kevin Feige,
long game.
And can we bring it back to Stan Lee? Because one thing I want to say is, as much as people can argue, well, you know, Steve Ditko created this character, you know, this person created
one. We know who was involved across the board.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Guess what? Guess what, motherfucker?
Exactly.
It wasn't Spike Lee. whoever did that, you was trying to be a dickhead. Like, come on, bro. You was trying to be a dickhead.
So I wanted to bring up this fact. My boss, my vice president, is about like late 50s, early 60s. So when Stan Lee died, he texted me. He texted me, RIP Stan Lee. So, you know, I said, I know it was inevitable, but I still couldn't believe it. And this is coming from somebody who's a lot older than me. Literally text me. He was like, the guy took on topics like drug use, race relations, diversity, being okay with not being perfect, unsettling political issues, all in some of the most tumultuous times in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. So this is somebody who's a lot older than me. So this is somebody that's like 58, 59 years old and is saying, you know, this guy like was like, it had such an impact on me. Because he remembers like a time where fucking Richard Nixon got like literally like kicked out of office. He was like, you want to know what happened to my president? You keep talking about your president. My president hopped in a helicopter and flew the fuck off. And we ain't know what the fuck was going to happen the next day.
No way. People don't realize like Stan Lee was working for the comic company. But when he saw the nation was going to war, he was like, you know what? I'm not just going to be sitting here making comics. I'm going to go to war, too. And people don't realize he was actually in the service with Dr. Seuss.
Yes, he was.
Both of them were in the
service
together.
And he did training videos in the army with Dr.
Seuss. Like, you not fighting, motherfucker. You got some good ass stories.
You're a good writer. We're going to put you on our writing team.
Write some shit.
So he was the first one to start putting PSAs in comics. If you remember in comics, always in the back or in the middle and everything.
They would put
those little like fucking PSAs and everything. Yeah, it would bother you from reading your comic, but Stan was like one of the major predicators of getting that shit started.
Right.
Yeah. Because not only did he put characters that had addiction problems in their comics. Like Flash Thompson, when he came back from Vietnam, had his alcohol problems before he became Agent Venom. He was a fucking mess.
Right.
Right.
You know, so like the inside of the comics, as far as having that editorial, like how you would say integrity to say that like, okay, we're going to tackle this issue this week. Flash is going to be a fucking drunk.
Right. Right.
And only the coherence of having a cohabitation with a fucking alien symbiote is going to keep him from jumping over the fucking ledge.
Right.
So I got a question. This is just me not knowing, but after Marvel started blowing up with the backstories of the characters, again, because Marvel was one of those, they almost made the aliases as popular like as the hero itself. So you had Tony Stark is almost as popular as Iron Man, you know, Bruce Banner.
Right.
So, and before that, I mean,
because he got you to feel the human element of the people that were behind it. Like Tony Stark, that second Iron Man where you saw him like, I'm so rich that I can do anything, the fact is
you can't
I've consumed so much.
And he was an alcoholic too.
He was like, I consume so much that my life still doesn't mean shit. I'm alone. I'm just down here building some shit. And I ain't got no woman down here. Pepper keep coming down here. I tell her to go the fuck back upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I'm a mess.
Right. Damn.
And the thing is, you identify with that person. Yeah. Like,
he made all his bread selling missiles that fucked everything up.
Yeah. Straight up.
And he got injured by the missiles that he sold. So
What you're kind of leading to is the fact that, if we're going to say DC versus Marvel again, DC
characters spend so much of their time hiding who they are. They're yeah. real. They really are. Their
you
identity
guys plan
is
that?
Always.
No.
But
no,
Marvel characters aren't. You know, Steve Rogers is Captain America. Right. You know, yeah. like there's no. The burden it takes to try you're to right. hide this whole other identity,
right.
they don't have that, so they're able to be more yeah. vulnerable yeah, right. well, that's about the thing. Who yeah, they
you
are.
Even touch on that further, because Civil War had the Superhero Registration Act,
oh,
and
man.
Motherfuckers yeah. had to come up out their goddamn yep, costume because did. The government asked them to.
Yeah. Well, yeah. See, when you get into stuff like that that came later, it all does have to do with, it's a branch off of the groundwork that Stan
correct.
Stan made a world where these new writers, because they did need new writers at a certain mm-hmm. point, Stan is stuck in a certain time. Mm-hmm. Now new writers off of his template,
yeah.
you know what I'm saying? His ingredients, we can cook up this shit. The other people had, to me, not to him, inferior ingredients, you know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Over
yeah.
at DC.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's literally, me being a comic book writer, being a comic book artist, if I had to write a story for Superman, it would be more difficult than writing one for Spider-Man. You
yes.
know, Spider-Man, yeah. power level is lower. There's more danger for
because
him.
Because here's
you
the
know
thing.
What I mean?
Here's the thing. Because when you think about Marvel Comics, you have Spider-Man and Peter Parker. Yes, they're two separate entities, if you will. One's the superhero, one's the alter ego / secret identity, whatever you want to call it. But each person has their own merits. So you get attached to each person. You get attached to Spider-Man for his heroism and his feats of strength or whatever it be. But you get attached to Peter Parker because, hey, that's a college student who's struggling. I've been through that.
Yeah.
When you look on the other side, when you will use Superman as the analogy. You look at Superman, you look at Clark Kent. Do I care about either of those two outside of maybe just the superhero because
now,
of his heroism? I don't care about Clark Kent
ever,
at all.
Did they ever go back and read after DC saw what Marvel was doing with these stories, did they go back and then start trying to elaborate on these the people's backstory?
I think they did try to do
afterwards?
That. I think they did try to do that. They tried to bring this influence of like realism to the character, or this influence of, you know, trying
kinda
to give
like
a backstory.
Kind of like what they did with Superman in the like Batman vs Superman.
They tried to do it with, and the same thing with Wonder Woman. But the thing is, you look at those, you look at their backstories. When you look at Themyscira with Wonder Woman in the movie, you're like, wow, okay, now I can kind of see where she came from, and their telling of where she came from and how she came to be this really powerful superhero in the Justice League. But I can't relate to Themyscira at all, or any, you know, most of the people
right.
who are watching are like, okay,
I don't care about
this Greek mythology or whatever they're trying to go with that type of backstory. I don't care.
And that was,
can't
that
relate.
Was, that was
right.
actually
yeah.
kind of the problem with the first couple Thor movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just like, they were so engulfed into that
Asgard.
It was just
glamorous world
like,
of Asgard. Yeah.
yeah, where in the third, when the third form,
where Heimdall was the only black poop.
Like they decided, hey man, let's scrap it. Let's make Thor more real, man.
Let's rid of Asgard.
Let's destroy this whole thing because nobody can relate to it.
Yeah.
Like the first Thor
Thank
movie
God for
was all right. Was pretty good. I think it was all right. The dark world is like boring. Like it's a boring movie.
Yeah,
it was a bore. Like it was. Board.
Man, come on. Damn.
Board, man.
That was all right, man.
Man. That's probably the worst.
It was a C minus.
Yeah.
A minus, though?
Yeah. Thor, the second Thor was a C.
And I think on some days you're being kind with
hold
that.
Hold on, you going to get that Jonah almost D.
Yo, everybody's agreeing with you in the chat. They're like, yep.
The Dark World was boring.
Hold on. That's almost a D. But you like the Runaways, my nigga?
That's not. I can't defend that. Man, I don't know.
I don't think they're comparable.
Yeah,
That's a show on.
Yeah,
on Hulu.
I'm just
this
saying
a,
if
we're
you
talking
get
about
a D is a fucked up grade.
I didn't give it a D. It's a C minus.
No, but that's a D.
It was one or two mistakes away.
It got some extra credit. All right,
to be honest,
that's the Venom shit. Like
ultimately,
no, Venom was
ultimately at the end.
Hold on, wait. Is Venom better than the Dark World?
To be fair, I haven't seen it. I'm like,
oh,
I don't have to cry.
Venom's better.
Yo, he got the virus.
For campy, and therefore,
Venom's better. I hate to say that, but particular movie.
We have 5 minutes left, so with this 5 minutes, something I wanted to do from the beginning, I want each of us to give our own personal, like Stanley testimonial as far as what you first remember or your best memory. And I can tell you personally, I remember having a babysitter when I was younger, and I don't know what show it was. It might have been like the Electric Company, but there was a show where they would have quick Spider-Man takes, and you would hear saying like, "Hey, Spidey fan, Spider-Man," and it was super cheesy.
Yep. Yeah.
And I don't know. I think it was the Electric Company, and I just remember his voice.
Damn,
and
one thing
I think it might have been
with Jim Carrey.
No, that's the cable guy.
No,
the Electric Company. No, he was on that Morgan, show. Back.
Really?
Morgan Freeman.
I don't.
Oh, that one. Oh, yeah. Shit.
So, and they used to have little Spider-Man shorts. And I remember at that point, I kind of got into. I was like, Mom, you know, I'm gonna get more Spider-Man stuff. And she got me color forms. Where this is as a kid, I had like this bald guy, big. Bald, fat, white guy with a white coat on. Little did I know it was Kingpin. And, you know, you had all of his enemies and stuff like that. And that just kind of got me intrigued. But I'll always remember Stan Lee's voice. Because his voice, talk about marketing. Hey, Spidey fans. It's you're talking, he probably has one of the most iconic speaking voices
ever.
But him and James Earl Jones, them two. Like, that's it. The most iconic speaking voices. That's something I'll remember. Ed, what memory do you have?
I think just the fact that, like, myself, I didn't really get into, like, comic books and everything else until, like, the MCU started to grow. Of course, I got into the Spider-Man movie. Spider-Man 2 was, like, one of my all-time favorite movies up until the MCU. Like, when I was a kid, a lot of us in our neighborhood would want to emulate and write stories about, like, Spider-Man 2, like, Spider-Man itself and how it influenced us just because of New York City, the inclusion, the diversity, and everything else. But then when it came to the MCU itself, just being able to see all these different stories being told in like this grand fashion. But the glue that held a lot of these stories together were those cameos that Stan Lee would do in the movies. And I think that just to have that kind of like alleviation of like, you know, humor in such a serious story in some cases, but just having that one part at the end where you can just kind of hear that dry wit come into play and hear that voice distinctly, whether it's him saying something, possibly not even saying anything at all, like he did with the Rocket Raccoon cameo in the first Guardians.
So wait, Stan Lee's like these movies watermark. You know how when we put an image up there, you put your tag on it?
Yeah, when you see
Stan
Lee,
you're like, this is authentic.
Yeah,
right,
you're like waiting to see Stan Lee in some capacity, like 100%. Influence the story in some particular way, or even just like give his quick take, like especially at the end of Venom when he spoke to Eddie Brock as well. Mm. And then just the fact that he was able to kind of alleviate the situation just kind of made the movie a lot more comforting, even in difficult times.
That's awesome, man. What about you, James?
I'll try to be brief. I was 11 years old and I hung around a bunch of knuckleheads and they used to go to Kelsey's bookstore and steal comic books. And I rolled with them one day. And I was able to pick up Spider-Man number one that my cousin threw in the sleeve of his jacket.
Yeah, you blame his cousin, and I bet you he dark skinned. Continue.
Yes, he is.
All right, so.
Oh my God. Right. So, Spider-Man Saga was the ultimate retelling of Spider-Man in a thick ass comic.
Yeah.
So, I brought that home, and there was a thing in the back of the book in order to meet the creator, Stan Lee, in the back of the comic. You had to like fill out the shit and send it in the mail. And I asked my mom if I could get a stamp and anything. I ain't win, but fuck, if I ain't buy like three more copies for 75 cents that day, like that was my ultimate thing. And the thing is, that's what got me knowing who Stan Lee was.
Right.
Because I didn't know who Jack Kirby was. Mm. The guy died in 94.
Right.
You know, but Stan Lee remained the end all to be all.
Then he used to write the Stan Lee soapbox
do the soapbox at the back of the comic. Right, yeah. So I used to like see that. And of course, he had the sweepstakes all the time. And I just wanted to fucking meet his ass all the time.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was fucking dope.
AJ.
Yo, when I was a kid, I got bullied to like hell and back. And like I just had some.
Who we gotta smack up?
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking like middle school, elementary school. Like, you know, I don't even know. Like, you know, they're probably like drug addicts by now. Okay. But
AJ wins fatality. He's like, yo, AJ, remember me? I'm back. Dang.
But like, when you're like, you know, being harassed and bullied, it's very easy to fall into those habits and like become like hardened and evil yourself. But I had, you know, great parents, you know, great family, things like that. They kept me on the
straight and narrow. Yes, we do. Amen.
And also the media that I consumed. I got bullied for, like, you know, watching, like, you know, Pokemon and anime and also comic books. But those heroes in those comic books helped give me a better moral center that kind of, like, compounded on top of what I was taught through my family. So things like, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. I took all that stuff to heart.
That's awesome.
And in a sense, that kind of makes me who I am today. So I'm not going to go on a tangent, but, like, that's what Stanley means to me.
You can give him the credit.
And guys, we got one more minute. So real quick, Nicole, what?
My earliest memory was the Hulk TV show, and it just was made me so emotional as a child. Yeah, I loved it. More than anything, what I want to say is just the impact that this man left on the world is just phenomenal, and the fact that so many people have come together as a result is what I think leaves me, you know, gives me the most hope and everything of his impact.
So true.
His impact.
Real quick.
All I got to say is that everything everybody else said was 100%. And I'm going to add to this. My kids, my two 13-year-olds, right, I hit them up. I was like, hey, man, Stan Lee passed. And they were sad by it. So that just tells you the impact, man. He probably probably four or five generations of kids that he touched, right? Mm. So that's his legacy will always live on. He's already missed. And he's the GOAT, man. That's it.
I remember being like a kid, like literally a baby in a bathtub. My mom would bring the TV near me. I could see Spider-Man and Amazing Friends. I remember his voice being on all of them. There was something that came on TV because we didn't have a way to like know what was coming on sometimes. And it was called How to Draw the Marvel Way. It had Stan Lee on there, Jim Lee.
I remember that.
And I would sit in front of the TV and draw. It made me an artist. So my job, I got to thank Stan Lee. And then also, like he said, the characters, you know what I'm saying? If you grow up with a heroic mentality and everything like that, that all came from that. All the morals and all of that shit came from it. Even the bad ones I got, like Punisher, because I'll definitely kill somebody. So Stan Lee's the god.
Party nerds, guys. We're going to miss you, Stan Lee. We love
you, Stan. Thank you, Stan Lee.
Take care, Stan.
Thank you.
Party nerds out.
Peace.